The only check, and it's a big one, is you don't want to crow around too much because you'll annoy the gods. And people who crow around too much are guilty of hubris, which is generally translated overweening pride, except that nobody really says overweening pride unless they're talking about hubris. But it's being way too full of yourself. That's what it is. And when that happens, the Greeks thought the gods made sure you were going to get it. You were going to get taken down a peg and taken down a peg hard. Not because you were being prideful, but because you were threatening the gods. And because you were forgetting, you were mortal. So, what above all do we get from Homer and the Homeric world? Again, nothing in the way of direct preachment. But Homer crystallized for the Greeks this individualistic ethic of achievement as opposed to an ethic, again, of submission, obedience, and compassion, which I would argue cuts closer to the quick of Western culture, and let's be blunt about it, American culture in particular, than any part of the Hebrew legacy. In our next lecture, we'll continue our examination of Homer by taking a look at the second of the two Homeric epic poems, The Odyssey, the chronicles of Odysseus and his Nostos, his return to his Ithacan homeland. And we'll take a look, too, at how that amplifies and enriches the conception of arete, of excellence, which we see explored in the Iliad.
After listening to Lecture 4, a student posed this question to Professor Schutt. Isn't the pursuit of personal greatness always at odds with the pursuit of compassion and charity? Let's listen to the professor's response.
To set it up as negative assumes that the pursuit of greatness always comes at the expense of loving kindness. In fact, in a way, they operate to some degree in different spheres, and they operate, in actual fact, in our own culture, in a kind of happy tension and conjunction. We, in fact, admire both. If Michael Jordan, Prince Charles, and Mother Teresa all walked into a room simultaneously to varying extents, we'd admire them all. We'd admire them for different things to some extent, to some substantial extent, but we would admire them all. And I would be inclined to think, too, that the pursuit of excellence, and you're right, without any attention paid to compassion and kindness, makes of you a self-centered jerk. But I would also be inclined to argue that the pursuit of kindness and compassion only, with no emphasis on achievement, can make you, if not exactly a sap, a pretty low-temperature proposition. That we don't like soft, mushy, 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 infinitely mushy. There's something inhuman about it. There's something, dare I say so, ignoble about it. I think the people we admire most are the people who combine a high level of achievement with high, what we could call, humanity in other spheres. I'll give you two examples from politics of people who are widely admired. George C. Marshall, author of the Marshall Plan, certainly achieved excellence, certainly achieved Team A, and exemplified in his life a kind of institutionalized humanity that made people think well of him. Despite his flaws of outlook in his time, most people admire Winston Churchill to some degree. On both grounds. Eisenhower on both grounds. As a general, if not as a president. MacArthur less. Why MacArthur less? Because he was an ego freak, which Eisenhower wasn't. But MacArthur did have his degree of arete. You get somebody who's got both, we're going to admire them more. They're not the same thing, but they aren't necessarily in opposition.
This ends Lecture 4. Remember to visit this course's webpage at www.modernscholar.com, where you'll find additional information about the lectures you just heard.